96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight on this Medical Monday, we focus on a very serious women's health issue. We're talking about endometriosis. Now, for women who have it, the discomfort and struggles are very real. But it's not the kind of disease that we hear as much about compared to many other serious women's health issues. But we are talking about it tonight. My guests are OBGYN physician and assistant professor at Howard University's College of Medicine, Dr. Timi Topi-Beta, and Kimi Rame. She is vice president of Howard University's Student Society of Obstetrics and Gynecology. She is also a third-year medical student here at Howard. Lines are open if you have a question, if you have a comment at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Bada, good to see you again.
Good to be back.
Absolutely. And Kimi, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Because we're going to explain to you why she's here. There's a walk that's coming up that and rally, which is extremely important, and we want to make sure we get that information out. But before we do that, let us first talk about endometriosis. Long word, Dr. Bada, but a lot of people still aren't really familiar with it if they don't know someone who has it or if they don't have it themselves. What is it?
So endometriosis is a condition in which the tissue that women shed every month can be found outside of the normal habitat of the uterus, can be found within the abdominal cavity, causing pain, sometimes often with periods, but often can cause chronic debilitating pain. It's a silent disease, unfortunately. It goes years before it's being recognized by physicians and treatment can be enacted. So that's why we're here to talk about the rally that's going on this Saturday to bring a voice to those patients who've suffered in silence for so long.
How does that happen? How is it? We're talking about the lining of the uterus.
Right.
Okay. And you're saying that it forms outside of the uterus?
Well, somehow it migrates outside it. So the endometrial tissue, which is what every month when a woman menstruates is what is shed out with the blood. And when that tissue, which is responds to the hormones that cause your period to happen, when it migrates outside the uterus into your pelvic cavity, which is like basically your abdominal cavity, can cause a lot of pain. How it gets there, there's a lot of theories that exist as to how that happened, but no one knows for sure 100% this is how this happened.
So the tissue, is it also, even if it forms outside of the uterus, is it also inside the uterus as it is supposed to be?
Right, yeah. But it's almost like little pieces kind of broke off and has found their way outside the normal habitat and environment that it should be, which is inside your uterus.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. On this Medical Monday, we are talking about endometriosis. What is it? What are the issues surrounding this disease? How is it treated and how does it impact the women who have it? Kimi, talk to me a bit about this event coming up on Saturday, which is coincidentally the same day as the March for Life.
Yeah, so we're really excited. This is the 5th annual Worldwide Endometriosis March, and Howard has been a part of this from the beginning. This is a day for women to come together, women who have endometriosis and their family and friends, or people who don't know much about the disease and just want to know more about it. It's a time for them to come together and feel empowered to get the word out, to make sure that we are doing all we can to make sure that this disease is more recognized, there's more research on it, and we can move forward and make this better for the women who suffer with this every day.
So what are the logistics for Saturday's march, if you can run that down for me?
So originally the first march was a actual march, but what we're doing for the past couple of years has been more of a rally.
Okay.
So we'll be holding it at the Howard University Hospital Auditorium. It will be this Saturday, March 24th, starting at noon. It will go to about 5 o'clock. We'll start off with basically an introduction, and we'll have specialists, doctors, physical therapists, also Planned Parenthood of Metro Metropolitan Area will also be there. And they will talk about their perspectives on the disease. And then we'll have a time for all those who suffer with endometriosis to have a testimonial and to share their story, because it's important that we hear from these women and hear the things that they've gone through so that we can understand what they are going through on a daily basis.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. It's a Medical Monday. We're talking about endometriosis. If you have a question, if you have a comment, the doctor is in and we're answering questions. Let's go to Tanya. Tanya calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Tanya. What's on your mind?
I have a question.
Sure.
I was diagnosed with endometriosis as well as adenomyosis, and I had fibroids and have since had a hysterectomy. But I wanted to know, how common is it for the endometriosis to be found in other parts of the body, such as your spine or your hip? And, you know, I know you said outside the abdominal cavity, but I wanted to know how common it is.
Before you answer that, Dr. Bowder, she mentioned adenomyosis,
yes.
Which is...
So adenomyosis is almost kind of like, I would say, like a like an evil mix of endometriosis and fibroids.
I see.
So fibroids are like this tumor mass that grows within the uterus, causing heavy periods and pelvic discomfort and pain. So imagine taking this mass and kind of like going through a shredder and actually kind of like implanting it, almost like studying, like if you think of Bejeweled, within the uterine cavity. So it gives the pain similar to fibroids, but doesn't distinctly show up on imaging studies as a distinct mass. So it causes heavy bleeding, also causes severe pelvic pain as well.
And she mentioned that she's asking if it could be seen in other parts of the body outside of the immediate pelvic area?
Yeah, so that's the thing with the endometriosis. The tissue migrates outside of its natural habitat or where it's normally supposed to be found. So it can be found in very strange places. It can be found in the lung. It can be found, I've seen cases where it's been like in the nose. So it can be anywhere outside of the pelvic cavity. Oftentimes, the most common place is for it to be in the immediate vicinity, which is your pelvic cavity, which is like your stomach. So when you get the cramping with your cycle or just this severe abdominal pain is the most common site. And then like most of the other areas in which you can find it, like in the spine or the liver or the spleen, usually probably is about less than 1%, but I'm not 100% sure about that number. But it's very rare to find it in those other places.
So Tanya, you said you've had a hysterectomy. Is that a full or a partial hysterectomy?
It's since been a full, because I had the fibroid. They did a partial initially, and then the endometriosis took over, pretty much both ovaries, because I also had cysts. And so that's when they realized that the adhesions, as well as the endometriosis had spread. So like the liver. And so they were, you know, trying to clean everything out. But even after that, it's like a year now, and I've still having a lot of that same pain. So I was just wondering how common was it for it to continue to spread?
Yeah. Like I said, did they remove your ovaries?
For the full hysterectomy, yes. But initially, I had the partial hysterectomy in 2015. I had the full hysterectomy in 2017.
Hmm. Okay, so as long as you have your ovaries, you still have the hormones that actually stimulate that tissue, right? If you think about your menstrual cycle and why it happens, it's because you have those fluctuations in your hormones that cause you to shed out every month. And as long as your ovaries are there, then that tissue that normally responds to those hormones are still there. So oftentimes, if your ovaries are left in place, then you might still have pain. And oftentimes, doctors have to struggle with, especially if you're young and before menopause, whether or not we want to put someone in menopause when we make that decision to do a hysterectomy.
How old are you, Tanya?
I'm 49 now.
Okay.
So it sounds as though you've had two surgeries, one to remove yeah. your uterus and then one to come back and remove your ovaries. Mm-hmm. And so I think the rationale, and I can't speak for your doctor, but what I'm thinking is that if you're not getting your monthly period, then hopefully that would at least lessen the pain and discomfort that you were experiencing every month. But then finding out that it's, you're still having pain is because you're still having that hormone production going on. And that might explain why the doctors went back and, but because you have this tissue in places that it shouldn't be, it can cause like chronic pain in other areas.
Okay. Tanya, thank you so much for sharing with us. We appreciate your phone call, and we wish you only the best of health. We are talking about endometriosis tonight on this Medical Monday. Let me go to Robin. Robin calling from District Heights. Robin, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I used to suffer with fibroids that were intrauterine and on the outside of my uterus. And eventually I went ahead and had everything taken out. And I'm just wondering, with endometriosis, how is it connected to fibroids? And what is the test that the doctors use to determine endometriosis?
So fibroids and endometriosis are actually two separate like disease processes. And oftentimes, and why there's a delay in diagnosis with endometriosis, because fibroids are very easily visualized when you do tests such as doing a sonogram or ultrasound, or even when you do a CAT scan, it's very visible. Whereas endometriosis, often the reason why there's a delay is because there's no good test for it. There's no blood test that tells you, aha, you have endometriosis. No sonogram or CAT scan can tell you that as well. Sometimes if you have like cysts that are full with blood, that might be suggestive that you might have endometriosis. But if you don't have that accompanying symptom, then also it can be missed. And oftentimes it's not until you get treated for one disease that you find out that there's something else going on. So there is no really good test for endometriosis. And that explains why women suffer for a very long time before it's even recognized that this might be possibly what's going on.
Robin, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about endometriosis tonight on this Medical Monday. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call. Of course, we will continue to take your phone calls even after 7:30 tonight on Sirius XM. So please, if you have a question or if you have a comment, give us a call, and you'll have to just hold on. If you're having any difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise you will be able to get through. Before I go to a break, Kimmy, please share with us that information about the event on Saturday regarding the endometriosis event.
So this is the 5th annual worldwide endometriosis march/rally. So we will be rallying at Howard University Hospital on the first floor auditorium starting at noon. Should go to about 5. Everyone is welcome. It's a completely free event. Come find more information, feel empowered, voice your concerns and voice what you've been going through. You want to hear from survivors of endometriosis and hear their stories as well.
So. Okay. Thank you so much, Kimmy. Again, if you are on the phone, please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are going to be taking your calls. That includes Carlin calling in from Washington, D.C. Also Teresa calling in from Maryland. We're also going to talk to you, and we're going to talk to Martina also calling in on the line. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Wes Hall is in for Jeff Brown tonight with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds. To the Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about endometriosis on this Medical Monday. My guests are OBGYN physician and assistant professor at Howard University's College of Medicine, Dr. Timmy Topi Bada. Also, Kimmy Ramey. She is vice president of Howard University's Student Society of Obstetrics and Gynecology. If you have a question or a comment about endometriosis, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Teresa calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Teresa. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to call in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty much like the other woman who I spoke about having endometriosis. I was diagnosed in 2012, and which I was 42 years old at that time. And I was diagnosed. I actually was going in. They thought that it was fibroids. They had no idea that they were going to run into endometriosis. And I went through a lot of I went through a very traumatic surgery, and because they found the endometriosis. And I also was diagnosed at, with adenomyosis at the same time. So I had, during the surgery, they were only able at that time to remove my uterus and the adenomyosis. I went for a whole another year suffering every day in chronic pain every day until I wanted to just basically kill myself because the pain was so bad. And I ended up meeting a doctor at Fairfax Hospital who said that he would be able to clear everything out for me the day of surgery. He looked at my condition, and he pretty much just said, you know what, I'm not going to be able to do your surgery. And he referred me to John Hopkins.
Well, let me, Teresa, I've got to stop you there. We've got a lot of folks on the line. And, but I wanted to know, how are you now? Where are you now?
How am I now? I just had my third surgery. I had to have, this third surgery, probably about 4 months ago. Because there was, I actually had the growth that had spread it to my liver and also to my diaphragm. And they were able to take that, remove some of that, but there was still some left. So right now, it is a little better, but there are days you have a lot of suffering still.
Mm-hmm.
And I think endometriosis is just so bad, and it's just so chronic. It just takes over your life.
Well, let me see if Dr. Bada can respond to what you've been willing to share with us, because one of the things that came up in that earlier conversation, Dr. Bada, is the caller who said that this had spread to other parts of your body. What specifically does that mean if you are having this in other parts of your body? You said you've seen it in the nose and what does that mean exactly?
So basically, and thank you, Teresa, for calling in, and I appreciate your courage, and I hope that you continue to get better. It sounds as though, the endometriosis she's had, and it also can be a difficult procedure when you go in surgically. And like I said, there's no single test that's going to give you the diagnosis that says, aha, that says endometriosis. Oftentimes it's trial and error. Like, okay, let's try this management. Let's try this. And then finally, when you've come to the point where you have to do surgery, you go in and you see a lot of endometriosis. It causes a lot of scarring and tissue. Imagine like having glue just poured inside your abdomen. Things just kind of stick together and causes a lot of scarring. Which makes the surgery often technically difficult and can lead to complications. But when it spreads, and like I said, there is several theories that exist out there as to how it spreads, but no one knows for sure. And so it can be found in different parts. It can be found on your spleen, which makes it also technically more difficult because the spleen and the liver have a lot of blood vessels and it puts you at risk for bleeding. So the goal of surgery when the doctor goes in is to try and remove as much of the disease as possible that's visible at the time of surgery.
Okay. Teresa, thank you for sharing with us this evening. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Carlin, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Good afternoon, and thank you for having this subject. I was diagnosed with endometriosis, adenomyosis, and I had fibroids. They were very small, but nevertheless, you know, I had them, causing me a lot of problems, a lot of pain. I held on to before I got surgery because I wanted to have children. But the suffering had gotten to a point where I had to make a decision, you know, do I want to keep on suffering or do I want to go ahead on and have an hysterectomy? I had a partial hysterectomy. They left my ovaries, which did not, you know, catapult me into, you know, the hot flashes and stuff. My question is, are there any new procedures for the folks that are, you know, experiencing this now? You know, I think it's probably too late for me because I've already had a hysterectomy. But I wonder if, you know, for the folks that are still out there suffering with this, are there any new procedures that they have come up with?
You bring up an excellent point. There is a wide range of treatment that that doctors have, and basically their arsenal on how to treat endometriosis. And oftentimes we try and start with the least invasive or least the most non-surgical option before we move to surgery. And a lot of that depends on if you're done having children or not, because once you decide to have your uterus removed, there's no really going back from that. So oftentimes the first thing doctors do is let's prescribe you pain medication that you will take with your cycle. But in light of this opioid crisis, I think a lot of doctors are shying away from even going to narcotics or any type of pain medication because you don't want to create a dependency and create a whole nother set of problems. And then we kind of move on to hormones, and the thought behind giving hormones is that if we can lower the amount of hormones that your body's making, it can make those implants, which is what we call it, less responsive. So it's almost like you're subduing them a little bit. And hopefully the thought behind that is if we stop your periods or at least lighten it, it can lighten the pain that you suffer on a daily basis and even during your cycle. If that doesn't work, then oftentimes the doctor will talk about doing a hysterectomy. And that can include either removing the ovaries or not removing the ovaries. But oftentimes and this is going to be talked about in the rally, there are other things that you can do before you go to surgery. There are alternate medicines like acupuncture, this pelvic therapy. Unfortunately, it's not open to everyone because depending on your insurance and if they're willing to pay for it. But these are different avenues of treatment that can be explored before you decide to take that ultimate leap. And we recognize that that's a hard decision to make, especially depending if you're really young. But if you feel like you're on the precipice of jumping off this ledge, and sometimes you almost feel like you're backed into a corner and you have to make that decision just to be able to live some type of life.
Mm-hmm. Carlin, thank you so much for calling us. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Bada, what impact does endometriosis have on a woman's ability to get pregnant?
Sometimes it can make it difficult. It's not impossible, but definitely, and it also really depends on the location of those endometriosis that spread. It can affect the tubes and cause blockage. It could cause, and the scar tissue that's within the pelvic cavity can make it hard for the ovaries or the egg to actually enter the uterus in order for it to be inseminated by the sperm. So it can cause some difficulty. It's not impossible, but oftentimes if a woman is having issues conceiving after concerted effort, I think it's important to bring up the issue of maybe it might be endometriosis. And because we have technology such as IVF, then it's not necessarily impossible. It just might not be natural in the way that we think.
Now, during pregnancy, would it have any impact on a pregnancy?
So I've heard different things. In my experience, some people get relief during pregnancy. And then I've had patients who felt like the pain is worsened because your hormones are such a surge in order to support the pregnancy. So everyone responds to it differently.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dasha, we lost Dasha. Dasha, give me a call back if you can. Martina calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Martina. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was diagnosed at 25 years old in 2004. I'm 39 now, and I've had four surgeries since 2004. My first surgery removed one ovary and one tube, and I was placed on Lupron Depot multiple times, and I've had the worst of the side effects, from the severe menopause symptoms to suicidal thoughts and depression. and had to seek a psychiatrist and get on medications because of this Lupron. You may have answered my question a little earlier with the previous caller, but I was just wondering if there's any better treatments other than Lupron and the multiple pain medications and surgeries that I've gone through. And I'm also married and trying to, you know, have a baby.
Thank you, Martina, for calling in, and thank you for sharing your story. So Lupron, for those who don't know, basically is like birth control on steroids. It basically shuts your whole ovary down and puts you into immediate menopause. And what that does, and the thinking behind this, and we've talked about this earlier, was that if you don't get your cycles and your hormones aren't activating those endometrial tissues, the thought is that hopefully you'll get some pain relief. But putting a 25-year-old into menopause can be very disruptive with the hot flashes, sleep disturbances, and then also it can be counterproductive, especially if you're thinking of having children, to be put into menopause. So sometimes the side effects can make it really difficult, maybe even seem worse than what you are being treated for, and it's not usually meant to be long-term. Mm. So like I said, besides hormones, surgery is usually the last step. And at the rally, they're going to talk about other options that are out there. But like physical therapy is one. Some people have looked to acupuncture for some relief. There are some new modalities out there that I'm not sure 100% what's involved in it. But sometimes like nerve, transecting the nerves that can cause the pain in the abdomen is one treatment that I've seen when I was in training. I'm not sure if it's still practiced, but they'll definitely be talked about at this rally.
Okay. Martina, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is a Medical Monday. We are talking about endometriosis tonight. I do want to ask, I spoke about pregnancy earlier, but what impact might it have on a woman's sex life, if any?
Disinterest.
Really?
If you're in constant pain, the last thing you're thinking about is engaging in any type of physical activity, regardless of how pleasurable it might be. So it's not unusual for women with endometriosis to have some type of disinterest in engaging in any type of sexual activity.
Mm-hmm. That's important to know. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I need to go to a break in just a bit, but I do want to ask both of you, why is there not as much information out there, indeed discussion, about endometriosis? I mean, the very reason that Kimmy is here is to talk about raising awareness when there are so many other situations, health challenges that women go through where you really don't have to raise awareness, even those that are not necessarily terminal. So why does this seem to be so much lower?
I think oftentimes because, like I said, there is no good test. So we tend to work in the tangible. We like to see the evidence that suggests that. And oftentimes, we can be very dismissive about pain. Everyone exhibits pain in a different way. We talk about high pain threshold, low pain threshold, and someone who's in chronic pain can be dismissed, especially when you do the workup, you go to your doctor, you do blood tests, you do imaging studies, and nothing demonstrates why this person is unhappy, why this person is in chronic pain. And so it does kind of doesn't get the recognition it deserves as a disease process. And that's why this rally is an opportunity, especially at the tradition of Howard and representing the underserved and the marginalized, to talk about endometriosis and make sure that people know that this disease is out there, to know like what is available, and to empower patients to be able to speak up to their doctors like, hey, I was at this rally. Is it possible that this pain that I'm feeling is endometriosis? What are you doing to help me with that? Mm-hmm. And so I think I'm proud of Howard and being able to continue to support and bring a voice and recognition to this disease.
I need to take a break. When we come back, more of this conversation on endometriosis on this Medical Monday. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome to the Orphan Diaries. Here's the founder of Food for Orphans.
Tonight about endometriosis on this Medical Monday with OBGYN physician and assistant professor at Howard University's College of Medicine, Dr. Timi Topi Bada. Also, Kimmy Ramey. She is vice president of Howard University Student Society of Obstetrics and Gynecology. She is a third year medical student. Before the break, Kimmy, we were talking about why endometriosis is not as recognized and does not get the attention of so many other diseases. You have your own thoughts about that.
Yeah, so endometriosis does have a genetic component. So it tends to run in families, and I think it can make it almost a hidden disease. If your mother and your sister and your grandmother had painful periods and that's what they experience, sometimes you don't think to look to a cause of what's going on because you see it as normal. My mother experiences this every month, my sister, my grandmother. So you don't think that maybe there's something else going on. And that's a component to it too. But also, as Dr. Bada was talking about, it's hard to diagnose. And many people go years, 5, 10 years without having a diagnosis. So the combination of factors makes it difficult for women to really have a clear picture of what's going on in their own bodies.
What age is, do we most likely see this issue? We had a caller who said that she was 25, which just seems so incredibly young.
So I would say the incidence is probably the early 20s. It may be earlier than that. Oftentimes when a individual gets their period, it's not uncommon to be like, oh, cramping is normal.
Right.
This is our lot in life, you know, take some pain medication. And then you get to like 20s and that after being on pain medications, ibuprofen, Tylenol for like 5 or 6 years, and it actually starts to get worse, do you start to think like this can't just be cramps? And so then that's when the first time an individual might seek medical help, saying like, I'm having pain that's, you know, all the time. It's sometimes very intense with my period, but oftentimes I feel like this chronic pelvic pain. So oftentimes the first recognition or the first time that someone comes to the doctor thinking that it's endometriosis might be in their early 20s. Mm.
We've spoken so much about some of the long-term implications of this, but are there any cases of this going away with treatment?
Right. And so I'm glad you brought that up because there is a spectrum of how the disease might manifest from individual. And so some people might have the worst case of endometriosis, getting hysterectomies at 30 years of age, still with chronic pain. And there might be individuals who do have pain, but are able to be treated with some of the less non-surgical modalities, like having, you know, pain medication like ibuprofen just during their cycle, or being successful on just being on birth control or hormone therapy and not having to even like broach the subject of surgery. And so everyone has response, or the disease is expressed differently, so that no one person is the same in how they have endometriosis.
Are there any connections between endometriosis and cancer?
That's an interesting question. Not that I have seen, and I don't think the literature necessarily supports that.
Because, and the reason I said that is because outside of the actual discussion of the disease, when we've had our callers say that this has shown up in other parts of the body,
yeah.
Usually when you hear that phrase,
yeah,
you think about cancer, you think about something that, you know, it is potentially terminal, but I would imagine that is not the case here.
Yeah, when the earlier callers were giving their testimonies, I was thinking that in my head, we use a term like it spreads to my liver. So it kind of gives this illusion of like how we describe cancer, like, oh, last time I checked, it's now in my spleen, but it doesn't cause cancer per se. And oftentimes, if you've had surgical management, it's probably been pretty aggressive in getting or removing some of the female genital parts, which is the uterus or the ovaries. And so, no, there's no cancer link.
But certainly, as you said, this is something that a lot of women, unfortunately, have to live with.
Yeah. And then oftentimes you may not even get relief until, like, hormone production has completely shut down, and that might not be until menopause. And so that's the thinking behind some of these medications, is trying to put someone in that state earlier than the natural human course for it. Oftentimes you might suffer from endometriosis and you've had the hysterectomy, you've had the ovaries removed, and then oftentimes it's still being stimulated. So even though we're thinking it might be hormones, there might be another component that we just haven't figured out yet in our research. And so it's not until you've gone into menopause that you might actually get relief.
So after menopause, are you suggesting that, that the pain would stop, that the, and I'm assuming, we're assuming that there's been a full hysterectomy.
Yes.
Okay. Removal of ovaries, no more hormone production,
yes,
and the like. And so as a result, where there's nothing to produce a lining,
yeah,
then there should be no pain.
Right.
Because you mentioned earlier, and I'm still kind of fixated on that, when you were saying that you had seen some of the after effects of endometriosis showing up in other parts of the body. Like, for example, you mentioned the nose. Do you remove it? I'm not, you know, this is a layman.
I know. So, I had, and the reason why I said the nose, because when I was in residency and I trained in New York, we did have a patient who had like endometrial tissue, because every time she got her period, she would have like a nosebleed, because that tissue that's responsive for the hormones acts like the tissue that shed every month. And so it responds in kind by having similar symptoms. And so, I'm sorry, I went off in a tangent story.
No, that's quite all right. Yeah. No, but you were talking about the tissue in the nose. Yeah,
exactly.
And my question was,
right,
okay, do you remove it?
You don't remove the nose.
Not the nose, but I'm talking about how as a physician, when you're talking to a patient and you say, okay, you have this, you know, this in, you know, in your nose, because again,
right,
you know, we're talking about something that begins in your pelvic area.
Yeah. And so, and it goes back to that idea of how it almost acts like cancer. The goal of surgery is to at least remove all that tissue that is
only the moving of it.
Right, removing. So either you're burning it or you're actually taking it away. But it's only what is visible with the eye that's actually removed. And so when you do surgery, initially the first surgery might just to remove all endometrial tissue that you see without necessarily having to remove the uterus or removing the tubes. And then when people come back, the goal is always just to remove that tissue that they see that could be causing them pain, before they start thinking about doing the hysterectomy, before they start thinking about removing the ovaries.
Because indeed, during the course of a partial hysterectomy, if they do leave the ovaries, and then we're still seeing a production of hormones.
Yeah.
That would indeed stimulate.
Yeah.
The uterine lining and the like.
So yeah, yeah. Cause you know, yes, exactly. So if you remove the uterus, you still have your ovaries. And in theory, that there still might, that hormone production that's coming from your ovaries might still cause the endometrial tissue to react and be stimulated by that. And so, nobody really, unless you're probably in your late 40s, want to put someone very young into menopause. And so when the decision is made to remove someone's ovary, the thinking is that once you've removed the major hormone producer in the body, that the pain should go away. Oftentimes, that's not the case for some individuals who still might have scar tissue, or if the endometrial tissue is found elsewhere, you can still have pain even though the main hormone secretor is removed.
Outside of the pain, when you're talking about a young woman who thinks this may be an issue, and when I say the pain, period pain, are there any other kinds of symptoms that would suggest that this is problematic?
And when you say problematic,
in other words, that they may have endometriosis, because you said there really isn't a test. I mean, and you, right, and so you often find out through.
Yeah, so oftentimes the first time you really know is with surgery the first time.
I see.
So, like I said, you go through this arsenal of like, well, let's just try pain medication. For others, that might work. You have people falling off after that. It works to be on ibuprofen during my cycle. Then there's some people who don't respond to that. You try hormones if there's nothing in the patient's history that would suggest they can't be on hormones. They do that. If that doesn't work, you know, we do imaging studies. You don't see anything. The doctor might suggest, well, let's just take a look inside and see if we can see the reason behind the pain. And oftentimes the diagnosis is made by visual inspection. Like, I actually have to see the endometriosis to say that you actually have it. So oftentimes the diagnosis is maybe even before surgery, just based off symptoms alone. But that's usually just going to be pain.
I think also, Dr. Botta, correct me if I'm wrong, that there's a wide range of severity of symptoms. And some people can have widespread endometriosis that spread beyond the pelvic area and have limited pain.
Yeah.
And there can be people who have little dots of endometriosis and have incredible lot of pain. So it's hard to say it. Precise symptom that would tell you you have the disease.
And also, I'm glad you brought that up, because that just actually, when you were talking about the amount of pain associated with how much endometriosis you have, it often can cause like pain during sex. Oftentimes, you might not necessarily have pain with your cycle or just chronic pelvic pain, but you might find like sex is completely uncomfortable for you. And so that might be another sign that the doctor might like, okay, well, maybe, you know, it might be positional, maybe it might be something else. It might be like your thyroid is not functioning. So you don't always think endometriosis if someone's having discomfort during sex. It could be pain with like making a bowel movement that could cause. So often if there's a pain symptom, I think it's important to bring those issues to your GYN doctor.
Well, I want to thank both of you for coming in and sharing this important health issue. And don't forget that rally, that endometriosis rally, Howard University Hospital, 12 noon to 5.
Yes, correct.
On Saturday, this Saturday. So please, if you're interested in finding out more information and or concerned about this issue, please attend. Dr. Timmy Topabata and Kimmy Ray May, thank you so much. I appreciate you all coming in.
Thank you for having us.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, March 19th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.